We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It is Esme Murphy, along with producer Jonathan Lowe, here on a Saturday evening. We'll be here until 9 o'clock. We have still a lot ahead. This hour, in our second half hour, we're actually going to talk with the managing director of the United States Olympic Committee from Korea. A lot of criticism that maybe these Olympics have not gone that well for the U.S. team, and certainly there have been some bright spots, but certainly some not so bright spots. So we'll chat with him as well. But this half hour, we are actually going to talk about a new study that says that more teenagers than ever are identifying as transgender. Mary Romanowski is a mental health expert and part of Park Nicholas Behavioral Health Team, and she is joining us now. And Mary, did I say your name correctly?
Yes, you did, Romanowski. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yes. Well, listen, thank you for joining us right here. Tell us, can you sort of summarize this study, and did this come as a surprise to you?
No, it didn't come as a surprise to me, because what I'm seeing with our youth is a lot of expansion of gender identity, and it's starting at a younger age as far as gender expression goes, and it's exciting. It's something that awakens us who are clinical professionals to the possibilities of how gender begins transforming within at a very young age.
Right. And in terms of, I know people, I have friends who are transgender who say, and the ones that I know personally have said to me, I knew it was wrong for as long as I could remember. I just knew it was wrong. The clothes were wrong. It was wrong. Is that something that you see, or in terms of the way this presents itself, can it be something that can gradually evolve for some individuals?
Well, truly, gender identity. So children recognize that around two, that they're conscious of the fact that there's differences between by genders of boys and girls, but by the age of four, most of them have an identity of a stable gender identity. And for trans children, one of the things that many of us say is that it's a persistent and consistent and insistent about their identity in comparison to children who are simply doing a lot of play gender things. It's different for those who are transgender.
Okay. And so when you say play gender, what do you mean by play gender? Like they might pretend to be a boy and they're
right.
a girl? Or...
So when children are growing, we look at play, we as adults, as something that distracts us from everyday life. But for children, play is life. And so they act out much of what's going on internally through their play. And so sometimes children may show some non-conforming gender roles in playing, but that's different than those who are trans who recognize the fact that they are different from a very young age.
And what ages have you seen people come in seeking help or families coming in?
Generally, I work with adolescents and older, and so much of my work is being done by that, by the time that they are adolescents and working out sexual orientation and gender issues. But some of the other places that work with younger kids can see some identifiers in elementary school, for example.
Wow. And, you know, certainly if you're dealing with adolescents, I've got two at home. It's not an easy time. It is fraught with conflict, which I think is part of being an adolescent, to have those kinds of tensions. It must be, for some of the families, I imagine that this cannot be an easy situation for some of them. I imagine, though, there are others that are, you know, perfectly accepting. What is sort of the range here that you see?
Well, a lot of it. So anxiety is common between parents and adolescents in general, but then and also with
that makes me feel better.
Okay, because as adolescents enter and move through puberty, there's lots of labile emotions and so some of what I hear from transgender adolescents, for example, is this feeling of being different, but to the point where they have who do I identify with in school? Who is safe for me to be with in school? I don't want to attract a lot of attention to myself, and I know that I'm different. And all parents want children to, and adolescents in particular, as they're developing through puberty, to be able to have a life that is not so difficult, but it is difficult. Adolescence is very difficult, and friendships and inner identities and all of that mix in the mix. And so when I see that when parents are distressed because transgender adolescents might be in conflict or in distress, they don't want that for them. They want to be able to have, you know, happiness and confidence and things like that, which eventually evolves in time. But some of it works through in some of the distress and some of the questioning and some of the wondering, because they take an identity and then it blossoms. But it takes time to blossom. And you and I as adults would love to tell adolescents, like, it gets better. Things work out, because we've seen those things, you know, ourselves. But while we go through their distress, it becomes very, very stressful on the parents.
Are there some cases where parents are resistant?
Well, yes.
And how common is that? And I mean, because I imagine this must be, I mean, that has got to be incredibly painful.
It is incredibly painful. So the adolescents that I see, fortunately, right now are with parents who are very supportive. So that makes their journey better. But they know they have friends whose parents aren't, who reject them, who don't. And so those friends of theirs feel alone, and it leaves those adolescents who have supportive parents feeling bad for their friends that they have supportive parents and their friends don't. And so there's a lot of pain that goes around. And that's where depression and anxiety mix in, and that children become at risk. And, you know, historically in other LGBTQ kids, that some of them are, you know, rejected from their families. They're left to figure out where they're going to be and live and with whom, because they're oftentimes given, for those who are rejecting them, like, you either don't do this and live with us, or you're out. You know, you're out on your own then. And it's a painful rejection that some kids have to face.
We're chatting with Mary Rymanowski. She's a mental health expert and part of Park Nicholas Behavioral Health Team. We're talking about a new study that says more than more teens than ever are identifying as transgender. Mary, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd like to ask you, just what should people do? What resources are out there? Obviously, Park Nicholas right here. You know, what resources, you know, are available, whether it's online or just, you know, brick and mortar? Because I think a lot of people are wrestling with this, and this is becoming as clearly this study says more and more common. So let's take a quick break. You are listening to News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
May Murphy with you until 8 o'clock, chatting with Mary Rymanowski, a mental health expert and part of Park Nicollet's behavioral health team, about a new study that says more and more teens are identifying as transgender. What help is out there? What resources are out there for parents and for kids, whether it's online or actually, you know, people like yourself who people go to for help?
Well, fortunately, we have resources here, and then we have resources nationally. So Outfront Minnesota is a big organization that has a big umbrella, and they have programs for youth, including for schools. They offer gender and sexuality alliances for middle schools and high schools. Another good resource is called Transforming Families, and that's a peer support group aimed towards trans and gender nonconforming youth and their families in Minnesota, and that is here in the metro area too, for families to meet other families and youth to meet other youth in a safe place and talk about their lives and even at times some of their struggles and such, so that they have people that they can be open with and feel safe. On another front, PFLAG offers BFLAG.org, and they offer a wonderful book called Be Yourself, which offers questions and answers for LGBTQ youth. And so they have a number of different ways of a conversation of what might a youth be asking for, and some of the answers, busting the myths and providing a lot of reassurance. And then there's the Family Acceptance Project, which is a family project at SFSU.edu. And that provides a lot of research. But one of the things that I really like about them is that they really try to do family-based therapy for LGBTQ youth evolving, so that it's a family thing, and trying to deal with issues within the family that are social, cultural, and religious. And so it gives people a place that they can go to read and see, but then also, you know, by all means, coming in and talking to somebody like myself is another place too. And one of the things that we try to do here at Park Nicollet is to offer all are welcome, so that people can feel like you can go to the clinic that you seek medical attention for, and that you can also be exploring some of these issues too, that all are welcome. We don't separate out people from the greater whole.
Right. And I know, you know, as part of your counseling, because I know, you know, the people I know that are transgender, that there's sort of a spectrum of people who, you know, decide to go different routes, whether it's kind of, you know, hormone treatments, or some choose not to. There's some, you know, offer surgical options. And it seems very individualized, the way people's paths evolve. Do you get into that in your therapy sessions or your sessions?
Correct. And so one of the things about it used to be thought of with coming out of all spectrums that it was a linear process. But it's not really a linear process per se, that as people, so one of the important things about therapy is it gives a person who is who wants to explore their identity, where do they want to go? So sometimes it's just therapy that's enough for them. But sometimes they have therapy and then come to the realization, like, no, I want more, like I want to be able to medically address some of these issues as well. So it's a wide exploration without a thought that it's going to be from point A or B or C. It's constantly evolving, and it's a wonderful for somebody like myself to witness these explorations of self. And it's amazing with the younger folks just how broad it can go. And it just is very astounding, because 20 or 30 years ago, we had very compartmentalized identities. But now there's such a fluidity with the younger folks that they're really teaching me a lot about how fluid gender is, something that we might not have been even discussing a decade ago.
And again, that just is a range of options that people can, you know, embrace at any point.
Right, right, right. And that's why, so sometimes what some parents want to do is they want to rush to assume something. Like they want to, it's not unusual from time to time that a parent has asked me, like, what if I suspect my child is LGBTQ? Should I say something? And I respond back like, wait for them, because they may be still exploring where they are without somebody jumping in and assuming something that might be not the exact point where they are, or it might not be exactly in that way that their parents may perceive it as. And so to be open to that.
All right. Well, it is certainly fascinating. And it's you know, I think that this seems to be, you know, sort of one of the last barriers to fall. And I think what was, you know, in terms of counseling and just, you know, options for people who are identifying themselves as, you know, GLBTQ, this seems to be sort of lagging behind, you know, in terms of the transgender piece of this. But it seems like it's catching up now, at least, you know, with resources like you and all the ones that you named out there. Would you agree with that, or?
Oh, definitely. And to add to that, like, the millennial generation is very open, I mean, at large, to a lot of this idea of gender spectrum, and that opens up the door for many to be able to express their gender openly earlier than, say, they might have been able to do like a decade ago.
Right. Well, it is, yeah, it is a remarkable development. Well, listen, I just wanted to thank you so much. That is Mary Rymanowski, mental health expert and part of Park Nicholas Behavioral Health Team. Thank you for joining us on this.
Well, I really appreciate this opportunity, Esme, to speak with you tonight.
All right, absolutely. We appreciate it as well. Thank you.
All right, you have a good night now.
All right, absolutely. All right, folks. I just want to let you know that we do need to take a break, give you some weather, because it's all over the map. And then hopefully we will be joined by Mark Jones. He's a managing director of the United States Olympic Committee. He works with the Olympic Committee in Colorado Springs, but he's originally from Hastings, Minnesota. So hopefully he will join us get his take on how the games are going in Pyeongchang. But let's take a quick break. You are listening to News Radio 830 WCCO. And there you have it. Of course, the Olympic theme. Many of us, of course, following the Olympics with great interest here. Certainly a lot of speculation about the ratings for TV. This is actually one of the best markets in the country. People are following the events in Pyeongchang. And right now we are being joined by Mark Jones. He is a managing director of the United States Olympic Committee. And he is originally from Hastings, Minnesota. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on. First of all, what day, what time is it in Korea right now?
It is Sunday morning in Korea. We're watching some giants fall in first runs in the qualifying of the slopestyle and just getting started.
Very, very cool. I do want to ask you, first of all, how does one get to become a managing director of the U.S. Olympic Committee? If you can kind of give us your narrative of how you made it from Hastings to this kind of position, because as jobs go, that sounds like a pretty cool one.
It is cool. We're pretty lucky. I certainly prefer spending more time talking about these athletes, but I went to the University of Wisconsin, spent some time in D.C., and worked for a PR agency in Chicago, and sort of just fell into the Olympic space maybe a decade ago or so, and I've been with the committee for 8 years.
Okay,
so very lucky indeed.
All right. Well, let me ask you about the U.S. team, because there have, and I'm sure you've seen some of the headlines here. I've read that the Minnesota, the U.S. had the largest team. Is that correct?
It is largest team, in fact, in history.
In history.
The largest one of these games, but the largest team that any country's ever sent to a game.
All right. And one headline said, critical headline said that the U.S. is doing a face plant over there in Korea. Is that a bit too harsh in your view?
I think that's quite a bit too harsh. We certainly have missed a couple of opportunities, but, we've got more than a week to go left of competition and some great athletes out there competing their hearts out. You look at Jessie Diggins from Minnesota. You know, she doesn't come up on the podium counter or on the medal tracker, but she's, along with the team yesterday, now has four top six finishes, which is maybe the greatest performance in American women's cross-country history. So, you know, it doesn't show up on the medal count, but Jessie Diggins from Afton, Minnesota is killing it.
Right. And I think I saw the relay. I think that was on actually this morning, which maybe it was the last night. It's a little confusing to figure that out.
Last night here, yeah.
Yeah, last night here. But I think they had it on this morning here. I was watching that. Let me ask you, was there any complications about having this, the Olympics here and getting this huge team over there and the whole logistics with the television setup? Given the dynamic that this is sort of in the northern portion of South Korea, as I understand it, you're just 60 miles from the North Korean border. Is that presented any kind of unique situations or challenges?
No. I mean, every game is obviously extraordinarily complicated. We've got a really great team of logisticians and technicians that, get everything from bobsleds to figure skating skates to a game. So, it's, location is not incredibly important. We've operated in Brazil. We've operated in Russia and London and Canada. So those are just the last five. And everyone's unique. Everyone's fun. But no special challenges with Korea just based on any sort of political machination.
Okay. So you've obviously worked on the summer games as well as the winter games. What is sort of logistically tougher in terms of the equipment and getting the team in place?
Yeah, the winter team is obviously a lot smaller. It's about half the size as far as people. But then, you're moving different types of things. Pole vaults are surprisingly difficult to move, as are bobsleds. But like I said, we've got people that have been doing this for a very long time and great partners in United and Rocket Cargo that make sure our things get where it needs to go.
All right. And I haven't seen as much, and perhaps I just haven't, maybe I've just been watching more of the actual action. But in terms of the setup there with the athletes' village, and perhaps, they don't, for security reasons, let you get as much in there. But in terms of the overall setup for visitors and also for the athletes, describe sort of what it's like, and is it easy to get around, and in terms of the logistics to find things?
Sure. I mean, it's really neat. The sort of headquarters of our operation is in the mountains this time, which is unique to Winter Games and probably the first time since Lillehammer. So that's given us an opportunity to, really feel sort of more of that winter vibe rather than being in an urban center with the various indoor ice sports. So we went down to the hockey game last night, but we're principally up in the mountains, and yeah, we can get around as spectators. And everyone I've seen has been having an awesome time, even though the hockey game didn't necessarily go as we'd hoped.
Yeah, we saw that. That was definitely a tough one. The loss, the 4-0 loss to the Russians. So you're up in the mountains, and how far is it like to get from the mountains where you are to the hockey game?
Yeah, it's about 30 miles. So we're in Pyeongchang is essentially a winter village, and the various ski sports and sliding center are up here. And then down the coast in a place actually called Gangneung is where the hockey and the figure skating and the curling and the speed skating are.
All right. There was sort of a lot of attention focused on, how cold it was, which, of course, it's about as cold there as it has been in Minnesota. Minnesotans probably got used to it. But I also noticed in some of the cross country, because we were looking at the Jessie Diggins race this morning, that there didn't seem to be a lot of snow sort of surrounding it. Is much of this snow man-made?
Yeah, it is very cold. I guess very cold for many, not so cold for, a hardy Minnesotan. But not a ton of snow outside of the sort of venue areas. It's only snowed a couple of times since we've been here, but the competition venues obviously have plenty, and sometimes, quite honestly, man-made snow is better for some of these competitions, especially if it's cold enough.
And we're chatting with Mark Jones, who's a managing director of the United States Olympic Committee, a native of Hastings, Minnesota. Let me ask you, how long have you folks been there, or are part of your team been in Pyeongchang? I mean, you obviously didn't just show up for the opening ceremonies.
No, we didn't. In fact, we've been coming here for almost probably 7 years. Every host city is elected 7 years ahead of time, and we start right away identifying, you know, where we need our operations to be and making sure our athletes have the resources they need. As far as this particular trip, I arrived on, I think, the 29th of January, and we'll leave the 26th of February, and then we'll come on back for another 2.5 great weeks of competition for the Paralympics. So long trips, obviously grateful for our families back home that are sort of manning the shop. But we're all incredibly lucky to be here.
Right. And so, but literally you started going, the United States Olympic Committee started going 7 years ago to this site to kind of scope it out.
Absolutely. And we've been, scoping sites in Beijing for a couple of years already for the next Winter Games. We're certainly dialed in on what we need to do for Paris in 2024. So working one games doesn't necessarily mean we're not always thinking ahead on how we can do things better or different for the next one.
Okay. And Paris, I mean, I've never been to Beijing. I have been to Paris, I would imagine. And Paris, is that the Summer Games or Winter Games?
Yep, summer of 2024.
Summer, okay, all right. So I was going to say, I know that there are mountains in France, but they're not near Paris. But logistically, is it more difficult with the Winter Games because of the equipment, or is it just sort of apples and oranges?
Yeah. It's different numbers of people. Obviously, it's easier to move 240 people versus 500 or so. But it's also easier to move, basketballs than bobsleds.
Yes. Well, and I imagine that must be, I mean, what do they do? Put them in bubble wrap or something? I mean, how do you, there's a bobsled case? I don't know.
Yeah, they go in a little crate. It's not unlike when we ship horses for the equestrian events. You know, shipping is actually some of the most interesting things.
Wow. And so you actually have, that's something that you have to oversee. It's not just the athlete.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I'm just the spokesperson. But we've got some great people that move people and things around with ease around the world. So it's pretty fascinating.
Is there something that you think might surprise people about trying to organize an effort like this? That some people would just kind of like when they realize that, kind of like, oh wow, I never would have thought of that. I'm sure there must be a million details like that. But
yeah, I think there are probably a million details, and the horse story is always sort of one I go back to. The these horses travel essentially with their caregiver, if you will, and some of them have to take some medicine to work it out. Some of them really love flying. Some of them it takes a few days of jet lag. So that's sort of, it's obviously not relevant to the Winter Games, but it's always sort of intriguing to me when we start shipping horses all over the world.
Right. Well, it's sort of like the rest of us. Some of us need a little medication.
Some
of us
are
okay.
Know.
Some of us have a few days of jet lag. It's fascinating stuff, Mark. And obviously, we'll continue to watch and get all the results and have a great time in Pyeongchang. It looks like it's a great day over there. So hopefully the U.S. will come through with some medals.
Yep. Fingers crossed. We'll be watching.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. I mean, that would be kind of a cool job, just to be there. Although you've got to, I mean, the travel must be extraordinary. I mean, in terms of, and as he said, a shout out to families and stuff like that. But very interesting. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mary McCarthy. She's the director of PR and communications at Meet Minneapolis. We're going to talk about some of the cool things that are going on, events that are going on in the Twin Cities. Preview them so you can know what's going on here.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is 7:49 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy, along with producer Jonathan Lowe, taking you up till 9 o'clock. I do want to let you know that oftentimes we have Professor David Schultz on in our 8 o'clock hour to chat politics. He is actually out of town. He's at a conference in Arizona where it's a little warmer. And so he is taking the evening off, and we're going to be joined by Another man who is absolutely a top expert in the field of politics, Professor Stephen Scheer of Carleton College, to talk what's going on in the political world. Is always a lot going on. But, you know, here we talked in the previous, just a few minutes ago, about what's going on at the Olympics. Well, let's talk about what's going on in our own backyard and what are the kinds of events that you can look forward to going. Kathy McCarthy is the Director of Public Relations and Communications at Meet Minneapolis. And she's here to tell us about some of the events that you can enjoy with your family. Hey there, Kathy. How are you?
I'm good, Esme. How are you tonight?
Doing very well. Well, listen, we wanted to just kind of, you know, throw this out there to let people know some of the really cool upcoming events that they can enjoy and maybe get, you know, some involved, maybe a little taste of spring or thinking ahead to summer. But tell us about some of the things you got going on here.
Sure. I know one of the things that you had hoped that I would talk about is Restaurant Week, which is coming up starting tomorrow.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think all of us think about, oh, let's get out and try something new. And then sometimes we fall back to our standards. So
yes.
Restaurant Week, I think, is a really great thing for people to finally say, okay, let's go and try a new restaurant. Let's try a place we haven't been before. So Restaurant Week will happen February 18th through the 23rd. And what this is that participating restaurants have a prefixed menu, either two or three courses for lunch or dinner, very reasonable, $10 to $35 per person. There are nearly 70 restaurants that are participating this coming week. And the great thing is not only do you get to try something new if it's a restaurant that you're going to that you haven't been to before, maybe it's one of your favorites. This is something put on by Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine, and they also partner with the Aliveness Project. And that helps support people in Minnesota living with HIV. So not only are you going and having a great meal, but you're also doing something, you know, really good. So that is definitely something that people should think about, you know, if you're looking to really get out and try something new. And I can throw out a couple of restaurants if you like, particularly.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Ones that are in Minneapolis, since I do work for Meet Minneapolis. But Betty Danger's in Northeast is one that's participating.
Very cool.
And, you know, the weather is warming up for another day or two, so maybe you can get on that Ferris wheel. They'll give you a blanket to keep you warm. There's also Mercury Dining Room, which is off of Marquette, the Red Stag Supper Club, which has a really nice vibe. Seven Sushi and Steakhouse is another one. You know what? They underwent a major renovation and just reopened New Year's Eve. So maybe if you haven't been there in a while, that, you know, check and see what they've done lately. But they're, like I said, nearly 70 restaurants all across the metro. So not just in Minneapolis, plenty in Minneapolis, but St. Paul, Coon Rapids, Maple right. Grove, Woodbury, Burnsville, so all over the metro area. So if you're looking for more information, you can go to Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine's website for more.
And in general, the menus on this Restaurant Week that are the Restaurant Week menus, these are less expensive than you would ordinarily pay for at these restaurants. So I do believe.
I mean, if you're thinking it's a two or three course meal and it's $35 for a three course meal, that's quite good.
Right, right. So it's a chance to really, and I think that this idea originated, I believe, in New York City. It was a way to kind of get people into restaurants. I think they did it in the summer when a lot of people tend to leave New York because it gets warmer. But this is a way to kind of stimulate people to going to restaurants and trying something new and something different. And the price points, yes, some of them are expensive, but it's less than it would be ordinarily. So if you want to go to, you know, Google and put Minnesota Restaurant Week, the information's all there. But it is a really cool chance and opportunity to try some cool things.
I agree. So there are a few other things that are going on. I know you were talking about what can families do. And the Minneapolis Convention Center has quite a few public shows coming up. And one that's still going on right now, which is great for people of all ages, particularly if you're interested in golf, and these warmer temperatures are probably making a few people think about golf. The 28th Annual Minnesota Golf Show is going on through tomorrow. So the hours tomorrow are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And that, again, is at the Minneapolis Convention Center. And it's the biggest show of its kind in the upper Midwest, over 100 exhibitors. There's everything from an indoor driving range to areas where you can learn more tips and skills. There's a $100,000 pontoon putt challenge, which the proceeds benefit the First Tee Foundation. So if you're really starting to think about spring, you know what, you might want to get over to the golf show tomorrow.
All right. Well, that sounds like a good one. And you can, like, it's going to get a little colder here in the next few days, but at least you can kind of fantasize about being out in the golf course here. So
I think we all fantasize this time of year, don't we?
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Esme.
No. Any other ones coming up that you want to let us know about?
Sure. I was going to mention the Lake Home and Cabin show that's coming up February 20th through the 25th. And you can find more information on our website, meetminneapolis.org, and look for the convention center. So that show, again, for people who are dreaming about things, whether you have a lake home or you're hoping you will have a lake home, plenty of things going on in terms of more than 250 exhibitors talking about, how do you decorate your lake home or your cabin, people talking about real estate. There are builders and remodelers, certainly people who can talk to you about boats and marine products. There's also demonstrations and educational seminars. So there's one really great educational seminar on pollinators and the importance of attracting pollinators and, planting around your cabin and your lake home to attract pollinators. There's also one on keeping the cabin within the family. I know for people who've had their cabins or lake homes for generations, I mean, that's something that is sometimes hard for people to talk about. So there's a presentation and a seminar on that as well. And there's just plenty of great stuff going on. So again, something to, to let us kind of get through the rest of the winter and really think towards spring and summer. So the Lake Home and Cabin Show. And then one more thing, just a little bit further down the road, but the Twin Cities Auto Show is always.
Oh, that's a popular one.
It is a very popular one. Again, taking place at the Minneapolis Convention Center. That'll be March 10th through the 18th. And just for people who are, interested in that and then also potentially interested in winning a prize, Meet Minneapolis and the Chevy Heartland dealers are teaming up to give away a 2018 Chevy Traverse. So you can go to the Meet Minneapolis website to find out more. And in addition to giving away the Chevy Traverse, there are also weekly prize packages that we are giving away. And
wow.
That's for families. A night at the Residence Minneapolis Hotel, tickets to either a Twins game or the Minnesota United FC, 4 tickets to the Minneapolis Riddle Room, and 1 gift certificate to Market Barbecue. So if you're one of those lucky families who wins, a lot of great things for you to do
awesome.
In Minneapolis, as well as being entered to win.
Well, Kathy McCarthy, thank you so much for joining us to give us a rundown of all of those events. They sound like a lot of fun. We really appreciate your time this evening.
Thanks, Esme.
Absolutely. Take care. A lot going on. Restaurant weeks, yummy stuff. That is really a cool opportunity to try some places you wouldn't ordinarily. All right, keep it here. Coming up next, we'll talk with Professor Stephen Scheer on Politics, News Radio 830.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.